This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
A silent storm begins to brew in an ancient land of darkness. With tumultuous force from the crust of the earth, two worlds come together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9. Wawinjeka, Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities.
Namani Yumob, this is Jacob Bowen. You're listening to Urban Dreaming, Joy 94.9. Nakanya.
Yes, welcome. You're on Urban Dreaming 94.9, the show about bridging the gaps between two worlds. And in the studio right now with me is my daughter, basically.
Almost.
Yeah, so this is our gal.
Hi, everybody. It's my second time on the show and you are listening to 94.9 Urban Dreaming. I'm super, super excited to be back and we are covering some really deadly topics tonight.
Yes, and we'll be discussing a couple of things. So can you mention what they are?
We're talking about the Literary Festival that you attended on the weekend in Phillip Island.
Yes, that was awesome.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear more about it.
Yeah, just beautiful, beautiful festival. First of its kind, actually. And that was something definitely we'll have a chat with, hopefully with Samira on the phone. And, of course, we'll be speaking with Joe Williams. And Joe Williams actually is an amazing advocate for Aboriginal people. And he works particularly on suicide prevention and also against drugs and alcohol. And we'll be having him in the studio, and he's on his way. So he should be here hopefully by 8:30. And then we'll also be yarning with Aunty Di. And Aunty Diane Kerr, she's actually a Wurundjeri elder from country. An amazing woman who's representing our mob and through the strong matriarch. And she'll be having a chance to have a yarn with us too about racism and sport. All right, guys, the song for you right now is Kutcha, Uncle Kutcha, and the song is Circles.
Cup every morning, put the kettle on, realize it's almost midday, half the day is gone. 'Cause mornings ain't easy to get out of bed. Need to get motivated, but I think I'll stay home instead. But there's so much work to be done. Rest I can't afford. Cash in hand, life's not meant to be easy. Well, so they say, ruled by the almighty dollar. But what's the price you pay?
Yes, Uncle Kutcher there. Deadly song indeed. And that was Circles. Yes, Uncle Kutcher is an amazing man, Australian Aboriginal singer-songwriter. He was born in Balranald, New South Wales, in 1965. He was a member of the Solan Generation and was removed from his parents at the age of 18 months. He is a Mutti Mutti man, and he was named the Indigenous Person of the Year back in 2001 at the NAIDOC Awards. And he won a Deadly also for the Male of the Artist in the same year. Yes, Uncle Kutcher, what an amazing man. What a beautiful voice.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, I just, in regards to Uncle Kutcher, because he actually was at the Literary Festival at Phillip Island, and he had a moment to really, a session, I guess, to discuss more about his personal identity. And a lot of people, you know, when it comes to musicians, I always find it's crazy, isn't it? Because we just know them as just people who sing a song, they get up on the stage, they perform, and they go. And we hardly ever get to hear about their personal journeys. And I think there's not many actual artists that do talk about themselves, funny enough too. And whereas Uncle Kutcher, he's the sort of man who, because he's a strong cultural man as well, he likes to make sure that people understand the depths of what he is and the layers in which he has. And he was discussing his journey from, of course, being a Solan Generation and talking about how in his younger years he wasn't very confident. He was one of those fellows, he said, he wasn't very confident. He never knew he could really sing as well. He was sort of just getting to learn how to sing, and he was a very shy kid, and he talked about how he was inspired one day by Renee Geyer, the singer, and he was blown away just by her presence and thinking, you know, that's what I want to do. So he knew at the young age, I think it was about 16, he realized. And as he was talking, he's the sort of fella, you know, he's got that resonance about his voice and he's just got that presence.
I think it's really important that people, especially Indigenous people, come out of that shell. As you were explaining, he was a really shy kid. And I find that a lot with our mob, you know, they're shame, they're quiet, they're hushing down. And I think for him to come so far and now he's promoting that in the Indigenous community, isn't he, with this festival
Yes.
that he went to on the weekend.
And what he mentioned also, yeah, definitely about the shame barrier in which our mob
breaking that barrier, you know?
Because I guess, you know, you have to experience that too to know that feeling. And a lot of our mob, we are in a stage still to this day, as much as we think we might be moving on and growing, there's still the shame factor is still so strong. I mean, look at the Kimberleys, for example, how strong that is with our mob, you know. There's so much talent and potential, you know, and yet there's this, you know, it's beyond, I guess, on the borderline of shame, but also being humble too.
Yeah.
A lot of our mob don't necessarily want to be in the limelight, you know. A lot of the mob just, like, prefer to just be at home, you know, and just chill out and just show their talent just naturally at home.
Yeah, I really, I saw that at the Dreamtime match, which we will be talking about later on in the show. But when the cameras came onto all the girls, they were all hiding their faces really shame. and then others were like, look at me. And they were really getting hyped up about it. But there was that real traditional hiding your face in your jumper and slapping each other. And it was so sort of beautiful to watch because there was that contrast. They were all, you know, the kids who were loving it and getting really into it. And then still a lot of people getting really shame. But you can definitely see how the younger generation is moving and starting to become much more confident and flexible, I guess.
Yeah, so I guess, so in relation to...
Yeah, did you see that at the festival?
Well, no, I just, what I saw, because I actually had the opportunity to talk about workshops, like the workshops that I do in order to, let mob realise their full potential. And because there's a lot of non-Aboriginal people, is mainly, you know, white fellas. We say gutties. But the thing is, a lot of these mob, there are older people too, which hit the older demographics. And I was thinking to myself, like, it's really interesting to see their perspective in accordance to what they how they feel when they enter traditional conversations. A lot of them are still to this day, and being older too, trying to show respect, but also unsure about how they go into conversations about cultural discussions. And it was really interesting to see a lot of these mob talking about how do we get permission, or what do we need to do in order to ask these certain questions. And the respect was beautiful and strong.
Right, so it was the non-Indigenous people who were asking these questions and wanting to... Yeah, I think, yeah.
And because, the Literary Festival was the first time it's been done, and it was it was featuring some keynote speakers such as Andrew Denton, Nova Peris, Uncle Kutcher Edwards, of course, Brian Dore, and the festival basically engaged in a range of storytelling, including... poets, musicians, artists, and everyone with their own story, which is the truth of it all. We all have a story to tell. And, that's something we need to encourage every day, that everyone has a story. We need to be free and be open and not feel
and
shame.
Yeah, really create that environment so that everybody is, I guess sometimes it's important to have these barriers, but where an environment is safe, we can break them down, and we have these places where we can ask questions and learn from each other, because that's really... I guess that's really the best thing we can do together.
Exactly. And on that note, let's play another song for you, and we'll be right back. Yeah, you're on Urban Dreaming, 94.9.
Thinking of making a new sound, I'm playing a different show. Every night in front of a new crowd, that's you now. Seems that life is great now. See me lose focus as I sing to you loud. No, I ain't crying, no, I won't hurt. So I say the words that make you blush. I'm gonna sing this now.
Wow, interesting, right?
Yeah, he's really interesting.
You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you. So you need me. With the lyrics, I'll be aiming it right, and I won't stop till my name's in lights. The stadium nights with Damien Rice, the red carpets. Arabian Nights, and cause I'm young and my brother's gonna give me advice. A long night, a short hike, and I've gone hyper. Never be anything but a singer-songwriter. The game's over, but now I'm on a new level. Watch how I step on this track without a loop pedal. People think that I'm bound to blow, but I've done around about 1,000 shows plus. I haven't got a house and I live on the couch. So you believe the lyrics when I'm singing them out wow. From day one I've been prepared. But be a five wax for my dark brown hair, cause I'm the same as a year ago. More people hear me though according to the YouTube and Facebook video. You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you at all. You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you. You need me, man, I don't need you at all. You need me, man, I don't need you.
Yes. Now, for those who watch The Voice, I don't know if you do, but I was an avid fan of The Voice. I still am to this day. And it was just to my extra surprise that my nephew was on the show, Bo Jesse. And you know Bo Jesse from Broome?
I sure do. He's a homeboy.
Yeah, he's deadly.
200 k's away.
This fella, I tell you what, I actually knew he had the talent from such a young fella, because he loved music, being surrounded by the Pegram family.
Yeah, having that last name, I think it's genetic.
Yeah, well, he doesn't go under the Pegram name, actually.
Oh, doesn't he?
No, but he's I think he goes by his father's name. But in general, he's under the Pegram family. So those who don't know the Pegram brothers, they're also the first original band was Scrap Metal, actually. And going back to, that's just showing my age there, right there. But then looking at Bo Jesse's skill and his talent, and then one day, I guess he had the opportunity to go, you know what, I want to showcase this to the world. Because he's done a lot of YouTube videos as well with his own music. So he's actually a songwriter, not just a singer. And he's... I strongly recommend it. If you can get on, on your YouTube, check him out. It's just under Bo Jesse. That fella, he recently just unfortunately got to the top 11 and was booted out on Sunday night for the finals. And I had a good chat with him, and he wasn't too disappointed, because he realized he's created such a great platform for himself, and obviously to inspire others. And he's currently in Queensland, and looks like he's up to some... special stuff, which I won't talk too much about, because we're going to have him on next week.
We are, yeah.
That's deadly, eh?
Yeah, we have some really interesting questions lined up from him, especially about his journey, leaving his hometown, and I guess, pursuing his dreams in the Big Smoke and travelling around, and he's really putting himself out there.
And speaking of leaving home and making, you know, following your dreams, I know you left home just recently as well.
Yeah, not too recently ago. I first left when I was 12 to go to boarding school, just because, you know, Derby doesn't really have a very great educational system. But from that, my siblings have all left now, and they've all been and at boarding school. So yeah, it's a pattern now. Everybody from the Kimberley's leaving and then eventually coming back and bettering the community there. So I think hopefully that's what we're going to see Bo Jesse do. As we understand from his last video clip on The Voice, he was really longing for country, really longing to go home. So I think he's really going to potentially go back home and, help strengthen the music community in Broome.
Well, I think that's definitely his journey. He did have a moment on an episode, actually, where he did break down. He was talking about, I just miss home, you know. I'm thinking about country right now.
Yeah, something we can all understand.
Yeah.
And I think it Big really time. Shows out those, you know, his values and how he was missing family. And they showed the beautiful clip of Broome and the peace and serenity that it comes with being on country and living there, connected to the land like that.
Hmm. And that's, another beautiful note right there.
This is Natana from Chasing Smoke, and you're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
There's a pagan moon rising from the coral sea. Red as the embers of his fire. The old man sits alone while his village people sleep. Dreams of his children are so dark. Yesterday. Thank you.
great. We're sitting in the studio right now, and it's funny when you sit up in the studio, you have these chairs and they're just going like all different directions. Oh, it's awesome. Hey, that song just then, that was the Alice Springs duo, Carnage and Darkness, who was better known as K&D, and that was the song Cut Me. What a deadly song. I love
beautiful
that.
Beautiful vocals. Yeah, beautiful.
That's the first time I heard that one, actually. So have you heard that before?
No, I haven't.
No. Well, you want to.
No. Yeah.
So that's the song you can always, I guess, check out now if you want to check it out. That is K&D with Cut Me. You got something to tell us, I think.
Yeah, so if you want to join into our conversation, you can text 0427 joy949 or email us on onair@joy.org.au. Or you can add us on Facebook, Urban Dreaming. And if you've missed an episode, head to iTunes and download the Urban Dreaming podcast. Give it a 5-star rating while you're at it.
Yeah, do that, please, especially for Urban Dreaming, because, you know, we are an amazing show.
And we are deadly.
And we're just going to get more and more deadlier. All right, guys. So just on the phone with us right now, actually, is Aunty Diane Kerr. And we're going to just quickly just tell you a little bit about her. So she's a Wurundjeri elder, and she identifies as a Gunan William Balak clan. And she was born in Carlton, and basically she's currently one of the well-respected elders here on Wurundjeri land. And she's also probably one of the first elders that I met when I came to Melbourne, who really made me feel welcome and gave me the sense of, I guess, the sense of understanding, you know, that it's okay to ask questions and to connect to country. And we're going to have her right now as we speak. Hello, Aunty Di.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's been a long time since I've spoken to you last.
I know. It's been ages. Yeah. All too busy.
And you're currently, where are you right now?
I'm at actually home. I'm like 2 hours late to go to the motel for the Koori Summit in the morning.
Gee, you're a busy lady, aren't you? You've gone from one summit to the next and all these meetings.
This one's the best one.
Ah, deadly.
The Koori Youth Summit is the best.
Good to hear. So just so you know, I've actually got Gal in the studio as well, so we'll both be asking a few questions.
Yep.
But I guess one of the main things was, I guess within the sport region, there's so much, there's so much strengths and there's so many weaknesses in regards to the sport, isn't there?
Yeah.
And sorry?
Go on. It's all right.
Oh, no, I've got to respect my elders. I've got to make sure you say
elders
the first.
Go first.
You've been speaking.
Can be very sad in the sport arena, you know. I've watched, Fitzroy Stars, for example, for a number of years, and that hasn't improved, the racism there. And I don't know. It's just not getting any better, and it should be.
So I remember reading, because you've got your own Facebook page, and you discussed a moment when you were in the booth, actually, during the Indigenous rounds, and you heard something that just really disappointed you.
Yeah, I was actually hobnobbing. I was in the president's function, and a gentleman was talking to his mates and said, he said, what do you think about that Aboriginal stuff? It was a bit much, wasn't it? And by the time I turned around, they'd walked away. But it really, really upset me, actually. I was on my own. There was no one sitting at the table with me at the time, and it disturbed me greatly. And I actually went home because it really cut to the core. And I spoke to a few people, and a lot of the people goes, oh, that's what we've got to put up with. And I don't think we do have to put up with that, you know, and it shouldn't be brushed aside. And it was a reconciliation game. It was the Indigenous round, and we were there celebrating. I mean, it's the biggest reconciliation event on the calendar in Melbourne. And for people to say that, I don't understand, number one, why he went. Because it's about sharing and it's about Aboriginal culture, and the speakers for the dinner were giving some hard facts and statistics and things, and which was, to me, a good thing because people don't often hear all that,
Yeah, on that note, why do you think he did say that? What do you think really brought that out of him?
I don't know if he knew he was standing beside, like he meant it.
Do you think
because I'd done the welcome earlier.
Yeah, so you think that he knew exactly what he was saying and who you were and how that would affect you. Do you think it was a very purposeful attack?
I'm thinking that the more I think about it, you know. And as I said, I was on my own as well, so
you were sort of putting
none of his mates answered him at all.
No.
Death of silence, you know.
That's
and it's just not nice. Like, it happened to me 2 years ago while I was doing welcome at the same event. And not in the same room, but the gentleman was there with his back, turned his back to me and was just talking to his friends the whole time I was talking. He was the only one in the room that had done it. So it's not new.
No, no.
You know?
And do you think this reflects the sporting industry on a symbolic sort of term, or do you think this is more of a individual sort of man who felt that he needed to say this, or do you think this sort of opinion really represents something a little bit more than that?
I don't think it's to do with the sporting industry. I think most of those people in there were corporates.
Yeah.
So I think that it does reflect what a lot of people think. And as I said, why be there? Why put yourself in that position if you don't like that?
Yeah.
What's interesting?
The only way to learn is for him to talk to people to learn things, and then you'll understand. I mean, the whole event was Aboriginal. Of course, there's going to be a lot of
Yeah, it's pretty. It's going to be a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was fabulous, you know. And
yeah.
I was really proud of everyone, and when family and that come out on the ground, it was great. You know, it makes me proud. I just love it. And I also noticed, like, a bit of a difference between our thoughts and other thoughts, because when I went out, and I said, I've got to see my family, I'm going out. But there was only a couple of us out there watching them, and the rest were inside. And then when it was ready for the ball to bounce, I came back in and everybody went out. So there was that difference as well, because that's when it happened, when everybody asked, everybody gone out. And I thought, that's a shame. I know they see it on TV, but you can't feel it unless you go outside and watch it.
You know, it's really interesting. I was just thinking before, because you've obviously done a lot of these keynote speakings at these particular events. And, you know, being a well-respected elder, you do get a lot of, opportunities to be able to represent our mob through these particular organisations. And I guess because you felt that sense of, you know, I don't want to be here, like those mixed emotions that you go through in order to, you know, you're actually promoting, but you're also feeling disgusted by the outcomes. So how does that look for our mob in the future in regards to what's going on? And will this just be another moment that's just going to be brushed under the carpet?
Well, I think we've got to stand up more and have more voice. And I really think, like, I'm going to talk to the young ones tomorrow about standing up and supporting elders, about thinking about not just what's happening in their community, how can they support their elders in their community? Because the elders do have a voice, but sometimes the elders aren't strong enough for that voice and they need, you know, someone to give them that boost. And I think it's the youth. Because a lot of the elders in the community, there's different things in society. A lot don't, our elders don't have that status, I suppose, all the time in the community. And sometimes they're not listened to. And it's up to us in the community to go back to our old ways about respect and listening. And, you know, the elders are the keepers of our knowledge. And yes. We need to look after them and we need to learn. But because of history and because of keeping things close to their heart and not teaching because they were punished, a lot of still happens. So that has to open up a bit so that we can all share and can do that healing, but also teaching. And we have to stand strong. We really do, because I don't want it to happen anymore. I don't think it should.
Well, it's, you know, being an elder especially, it's not good for your heart and your mind as well, because, you know, for too long you might have been fighting. And, you like you said, it's definitely up to the next generation to start, you know, putting a stance towards us and to not put up with it anymore.
Mm.
So for those listeners out there who are listening, please SMS us with your views on 0427-JOY-949. That's 0427-JOY-949. Thank you, Auntie Diane Kerr, for your time.
No, thank you.
Really appreciate
Love
your time.
Love you all.
Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Yes, Urban Dreaming. The time is now 8:35. And for those who, just to remember, that we are going through the radiothon at the moment, so we do need your donations. So if you guys have some moolah that you can give the extra bits of, you know, what you don't need, please send that through to Joy. We still need Joy promo videos to share with your networks as well. And, just social media is incredibly important during the radiothon, because it's about sharing your joy and your love with Joy. Because we need Joy. We need Joy Radio. And we need Urban Dreaming, because this is the deadliest show, I reckon. Don't you reckon?
I reckon.
All right, guys. Now, I'm just going to quickly just tell you, we're going to listen to this next segment. And this segment is about something that we're going to go into discussion with. So have a listen to this right now.
6,600.
6,600. 6,600. Champion. Not happy with that?
That's money.
I thought I would get that much.
6,600. That's pretty good.
Well done, Michael. Yeah.
All your relations in Cairns just went, how good, wait till he gets back.
We're having a drink.
All right. what's Aaron? You're doing something with the Telstra.
Yes, so that was a bit of a moment they had on the footy show, and that was with Paul Fatty Verton, and the conversation was a bit uncomfortable. So right now in the studio we have this amazing man. His name is Joe Williams, a proud Wiradjuri man. He used to play for the Sydney Rabbitohs, and he's also a professional boxer. And he's also the Citizen of the Year for 2015 with his work with the community. He works on mental health and suicide prevention sectors. He's also a published author, contributing to the book Transformation, Turning Tragedy to Triumph, and involved in the filming of Suicide, The Ripple Effect. Although forging a successful professional sporting career, Joe also battled the majority of his life with suicide ideation and bipolar disorder. And after, his personal struggles, he realised that he can do such amazing things for our mob, because he's experienced life and firsthand what it is to be living in these situations. And right now we have in the studio Joe Williams.
Hey guys, how we doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, fantastic. A little bit cooler down in Melbourne, but it's a great community, and always love coming back down here.
So good to have you on board. So that video we just listened to, we didn't really get to listen to the last bit of it because it's been cut, and I think, I don't know whether that's on purpose or not, but we did hear the bit of silence and someone said, oh my God. And the reaction of that young man who was chosen from the audience to be put on the spot after a terrible comment, which basically was basically racial...
racial profiling.
Profiling,
pretty much.
Yes.
You know, I've been fairly boisterous about these sort of things, in the past, and I'll always step out about it, because I'm sick to death of our mob being profiled in such a negative manner when it comes to, you know, a lot of non-Indigenous people jumped up and down and said, come on, mate, he would have said that to anyone. Yeah, but he hasn't said it to anyone. And like I said, forever, we're sick to death of being labelled as drunks. Why didn't that, you know, Fatty had an awesome opportunity there to say, you know, here's $6,000, champ, go buy yourself a car, or go put the money down on a home loan or something like that. So it was just a really negative comment. And, you know, take race out of it, take the fact that he was a young Aboriginal boy out of it, why not start preaching a bit of positive on national television? These guys have a platform to reach a huge amount of people, and why not be positive in talking like that? I just found it, you know, the ripples across the country, obviously our mob saw it and heard it, If you haven't been a victim of social profiling, racial profiling, and I guess bullying in that respect, then you won't pick it up. But our mobs see through it every single day.
And I think with that, the fact that the audience were very
aware.
There
was an awkward silence,
yeah,
wasn't there?
There was such
their panel members silence. As well. They like, knew that it was a stupid comment.
And the fact that they didn't then sort of lap over and say, look, I apologise, or I do recognise that would have offended. Like, they didn't, you know, like, even when you say things and you're having a normal discussion and you realise you've just said something without thinking, you do sort of say, oh, sorry, my bad. Like, yeah, you know, and the fact that that wasn't done sort of just really...
That's the positive thing out of it. The positive thing is that the audience and even the other panel members went, ooh, like, this is a pretty poor comment. But still, there was laughs after it.
So, and that, you know, it's swept under the carpet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a joke. And, it's laughed at.
Oh,
yeah.
it's okay. He would have said that to anyone. Well, you know what? Stop saying it to anyone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny that particular show has been, you know, it's all about comedy, isn't it? But there's this line, I think, where they don't realise they step over at times, and a lot of the times, where it's sort of they're getting away with a lot of terrible, you know, I guess placements of what they're saying in regards to cultural identity and, you know, and general, you know, protocols that have been broken.
Look at that segment that night. There was guys dressed up as Mexicans.
Yeah.
Again, that's, you know, that's...
culturally inappropriate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's culturally inappropriate to the Mexican culture. It's, again, it's profiling and it's misappropriation of cultural identity.
I guess, you know, with this ongoing sort of saga, how do we deal with this? And then what do we... When is enough enough? Like, what are we going to do in order to make people realise that we're done with this? What can we do?
How we deal with it is exactly what the crowd did. You know, don't react to rubbish comments like that. Come out and be an ally for us. Non-Indigenous people, and I've got to say, the amount of non-Indigenous people that contacted me personally and commented on a lot of the social media posts were extremely positive. They saw it. They recognised it. And many of them personally apologised. But there was still a lot of people that...
Who were denying it.
Flat out denying it. You know what? If this is the way I see it, and I relate back to the Adam Goode saga, what happened earlier, last year, is Adam Goode's found the booing and the abuse towards him as racially motivated. He found that, right? So he felt that it was racially motivated. For a million people to come out and say, well, that's not racially motivated. Well, you know what? Who cares what you think? He thinks it was. So if he felt discriminated, then you've got to respect the fact that he felt he was discriminated. You can't tell me that I'm not discriminated against when I feel discriminated against.
And that comes from anyone.
Anyone. You know, I can't tell you what you say or how to act. You've got to be responsible for your own, you know, things that you deal with. So if I feel racially, you know, spoken out against or put down or discriminated against, it's not up to you to tell me whether I feel discriminated or not. It's up to me to voice that. And it's up to you to say, well, you know, I'm sorry that you feel like that. Show a bit of empathy.
Yeah. So for those who couldn't see the video, if you haven't seen the video, you can actually naturally see his response to that remark. So obviously he was offended by it. And I guess like what you're saying, no matter who you are, if you feel vilified in some form or another, you have to speak up, I guess, isn't that? That's just what we need to
do.
That's
the only way it's going to change.
Exactly.
You know, I'm a huge believer in the quote of what we ignore, we accept.
Exactly.
For too long, we have ignored racism. We have ignored discrimination. That's why it's gotten away with. You know, when we ignore it, we start to accept it. And, you know, it's up to us now as people to stand strong in our beliefs. And why we don't is from generational trauma. Because if we stood up six generations ago when the trauma started with colonization, then we get bashed across the back of the head with something. You know, now we're in a society where we can stand up and we can stand up collectively as a group. And you know what? Non-Indigenous people can be our allies and they can stand up with us and say, hang on a minute, this isn't acceptable, this type of behaviour.
Yes. And the other thing is in regards to our mob, like, because I find a lot of these institutes that we have to deal with sometimes in regards to, because, you know, we're sports people, we're artists, we're storytellers, etc. And we're given this platform in a sense, but then it's the sense of knowing
but
that
we are humans.
Yes,
but we are just people to start with.
But what's happening is I find that with our mob, sometimes they're not taking us serious when we talk about these particular issues. And do you feel like it's getting to that stage where they think that, oh, they're just black fellas complaining about another thing again? It's always racial vilification of some form.
It's been that way for 230 years.
Mm. Joe,
it's about time that we had allies and we started to stand up for each other.
Did you experience direct racism when you were in the NRL?
Had it all my life.
Yeah.
You know, not on the field. Had it from trainers. Had it from coaching staff. Heard it from trainers and coaching staff. I guess I wasn't strong enough to stand up in it then. I won't name names now, but I definitely heard it.
And what about your fellows, your teammates?
They laugh about it.
Yeah.
It was joked about. And, you know, our own mobs that's played in those teams, they felt put down as well because we were always outnumbered in a non-Indigenous dominated culture.
You're on Urban Dreaming, guys, and we'll be right back with Joe Williams. Yes, you're on Urban Dreaming 94.9. This is 8:48, and we're currently in the studio talking to Joe Williams. And, Joe, we're just going to discuss about what you're actually doing in Melbourne right now, because I see you're working with youth.
You know, I work with young people, youth, and I work with people of all ages. You know, I'm in the suicide prevention space, so I travel across the country delivering to a lot of different conferences and schools and sports clubs, all around mental illness, all with the hope of reducing suicide rates in our communities. And that's all communities. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, you know, colour, race, religion, age. We're all impacted by suicide at some point in our lives, unfortunately. So I travel around the place and I guess I'm fortunate enough to be in a position to be able to have impact on people no matter where I go. Last week I was in Western Australia speaking in beautiful Broome and Perth and all around the place. And then this week I'm down here in Melbourne, back to Sydney tomorrow, but then Uluru to the communities out at Yallara and Mutajulu as well.
Joe, we were on the phone to Annie Diane and she mentioned that she was going to the Youth Koori Summit. Are you involved with that?
I am. I'm the keynote speaker kicking things off in the morning.
Wow.
So I've got the task of trying to inspire people first thing up. But, yeah. You know, I guess that I'm in a position of, I guess, a unique position where unfortunately, I've been. I had a suicide attempt in 2012, as mentioned in my bio. I've struggled with mental illness my entire life, pretty much. I didn't know it at the time, but looking back and knowing the history behind bipolar disorder, you know, I've had it all my life, and I've learnt to manage it in different ways, and you know, I do that consistently. I know that I'll have that for the rest of my life, and I know that I have the tools now within me to manage it the best of my ability. And I speak about that everywhere I go. My wellness sessions, I call it, where I speak about the things that keep me well, things that keep me on track. You mentioned in my bio that I live with chronic suicidal ideation. For those people that don't know, I live with constant thoughts and voices inside my head that tell me to take my life by suicide. Every single situation, I could be driving down the road in the car and it'll tell me to swerve into an oncoming car. Things that I see or come into contact with every day, there's a plant or a thought implanted into my mind of how to take my life by suicide in that moment. So it's fairly daunting. It's fairly, you know, one would say it's a negative experience, and it can be quite frightening in certain times, but you know, I've learnt to manage it. And where I lived as a professional sportsman for 15 years, and by living that and managing in my illness the best way I possibly can, I've learnt to be successful in what I do. And that's what I speak about in communities everywhere I go. I guess I've got a chance to inspire people to live their life the way they want to live it as well. I don't let mental illness define who I am. I don't let my mental illness of who I am put me in the box of a label. Unfortunately, in society, we see mental illness as so negative. It gets such a bad rap because of media a lot of the time. You know, there was a bombing here and this person had a mental illness, or, you know, the mentally ill person, you know, took their life, and as far as, you know, different destructive situations. Mental illness has got such a bad rap where a physical illness like a cold or a flu or, you know, a broken leg, they wouldn't go, a person with a broken leg did this, you know, like it's got such a bad rap.
Mm.
I'm not afraid to say I've spent 2 occasions in mental health wards, you know, the madhouse. I've been in the madhouse a couple of times. I've been locked up in there. But all it is, it's a specific doctor to help you get well. Doctors and staff trained in mental health to get the best out of those people and keep them well and keep them from being a danger to their life, you know, and taking their life in sometimes.
Well, see, that's the thing. A lot of our mob, due to traumatized past, and it goes on from our history,
yeah,
of course.
It's,
you know,
it's a ricochet. Of...
And we carry that with us. And I find that particularly with our mob, because I know, I'm sure you have yourself, Gal, have experienced the same thing and going through depression. We all go through that. And I guess it's what you do with that. And I always felt that, you know, because when I've had people who pass away in my family, that's the biggest thing that's always affected me. And knowing that you couldn't do nothing, you know, how could I have been there to help them? What could I have done to stop this from happening? So all these thoughts that go through your mind. But then you think to yourself, the only thing that keeps me going is knowing that they would not want me to go down that same line, and to realize that we are here to help inspire, like you say, and to be able to teach, you know, there's life beyond this.
Yeah, so many of our people struggle again with that transgenerational trauma of, you know, scientifically proven it lasts up to 6 generations. And then, you know, so 6 generations ago it started. And then every generation forward from that, if those traumas were happening again, it's 6 generations from that. So will we see an end to it? Who knows? But we're definitely affected from those traumatic experiences. When people say, well, that was 200 years ago, you weren't around, so it don't affect you. Well, guess what? It does.
It
because
sure
it's
does.
You know, it just rings home in our ear every time in these negative situations. So, you know, when it comes to suicide, our suicide rates, especially our men aged between 15 to 35, I think it is, have the highest suicide rates in the world. You know, I'm shooting a documentary about it. About what I believe will be the cure to those suicide rates and lower those suicide rates, and I believe it's in what we've all lived and learnt, but we've had taken away from us. It's that cultural connection. You know, what is culture? What is traditional culture? Is many different things to a lot of people, but again, because we live in a city or a modern society. We struggle to connect with those, you know, those spirits, those old people, what we used to do. So we've got to get back to those, you know, to those country ways and connect to culture and connect to what it is with our practices, like going bush and connecting to those old spirits and so forth. So, you know, that's what I believe will be the answer to curing our suicide rate.
I know that certainly cures me when I'm feeling really down and going home.
Going home, being disconnected from our country.
Yeah. So I'm from Derby. You were in Broome not long ago.
Yeah, I was in Broome not long ago.
Yeah.
So,
and Derby has the highest suicide rates
in the whole of Australia.
In the world. In the world, per population. Yes. So it's devastating. That's,
you know, and there's many layers to it. I spent a lot of last year in the States working with the Native American people and with Americans generally. And I just had a huge cultural pull from back here. A lot of people said, Joe, you're doing a fantastic job over there in America, and it's great. But our people have the highest suicide rates in the world. Why don't you help them? And one of my elders, you know, come up and said to me, it's time to come home, boy. you know, you got to start doing your work here for our people. You know, when an elder, you know, speaks, you listen. So I was on the next plane home a couple of weeks later, and you know, I'm happy with doing what I do now, and I get to travel around and impact on the derbies, on the brooms. You know, I'm heading to Carnarvon later in the year. Those smaller communities that really need those inspirations to help kick out of those dark places.
What a beautiful thing you're doing, man. I say, you know, we're supporting you all the way in what you do, and it's brilliant to hear that you're inspiring young fellas, and, you know, as well as elders, of course.
Yeah, as Aunty Diane mentioned, you have to look after your elders. She sort of really made that across in our phone call with her, and I think it's very important that we are taking the youth and the elders and incorporating it together.
You know, I heard that call. Once upon a time, it was our elders that were loved and adored and respected. We've got to go back to that ways.
Mm.
To the fact that we have to make comment that we need to respect our elders' voices wasn't a comment that needed to be made once upon a time, because our elders, they were the bosses. If we didn't boss, then we need to pay attention to that.
And that's what we need to do, guys. Continue that on. Okay, guys, thank you so much. This is Urban Dreaming. We've been discussing with Joe Williams. So very grateful of your time to come in and have a yarn with us live in the studio.
My absolute pleasure, guys, and you're doing a great thing. So thanks very much for having me in here.
All right, guys, you're on Urban Dreaming 94.9 Joy, and the time is 8:58.
Hi, this is Alfie Akuri. You're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.